Hello, welcome to Two Peds in a Pod, the medical education podcast from the Children's Emergency Department in Derby. I'm your host again, Ian Lewins, one of the consultants here, and I'm delighted to be joined again by one of my consultant respiratory colleagues, Dr. Nigel Ruggins. Good afternoon, Nigel.
Hi.
So, last time we talked about wheeze and making diagnoses. We're going to talk about a bit of therapeutics now.
Yeah.
So, we've made our diagnosis of, this child, I think, has asthma. Here's how we're going to treat it. And I'm presuming we follow the BTS guidelines.
We do.
End of podcast.
End of podcast. So those who are interested in asthma treatments will notice there are some slight discrepancies between what the BTS tells us to do and what NICE tells us to do, which in a way allows us to take the best of both and adjust it to your own practices, perhaps. Yeah.
But it's salbutamol first. First line, salbutamol?
No.
Oh, okay.
There we are. So there's a change, really. So effectively, if you're making a diagnosis of asthma, you are saying that this child has got recurrent symptoms, you've got recurrent background symptoms as well. So they would say that the first treatment really should be a first line preventer, which would be an inhaled corticosteroid.
Right, okay.
Okay. So there is a slight change in emphasis. Yes, of course, you still use salbutamol, and you'll be using salbutamol for symptom treatment in wheeze and in those patients that you've not yet got to that point where you are sure they're diagnosed as asthma. But if they are asthmatic, you're implying that they've got a chronic inflammatory disease of their airways, and therefore that treatment should be aimed at that rather than the symptoms.
Okay, yeah. There you go. Okay.
Yeah, a slight switch.
And thinking about delivery of that, it's virus-based.
Yes.
Every single time.
Every single time, except when you get problems in older children who will just not use spacers or will not tell you they're not using their spacer, but you know they're not, and they're using an MDI straight into the mouth. And for those patients, then obviously there are other alternative devices, dry powder type devices, things like turbohalers, acuhalers, the like. And if it means that they're getting the treatment that they need, then you know that's a good thing.
Better something than nothing.
Absolutely, and better something that's taken in a proper way rather than using something inappropriately.
Yeah. But largely spacers.
Yeah, standard is meter dose inhaler with spacers.
Okay. So you've made the diagnosis, you've started them on a preventer, okay. What are the things that you would look for in clinic that would say, yes, good response, or no, we need to up things?
Yeah. So I think you have to have a good thought in your mind about why you're starting the preventer and what you're hoping to see that it's going to be doing. So if they've got a chronic background cough, particularly nighttime, you want to see that go. You want to see them to be able to cope with sports and exercise, particularly in cold air, better. And if they do use their blue inhaler, you want to minimise the effect in that amount of time that they have to use that. You want to reduce, you won't necessarily eliminate it, but you want to reduce significant exacerbations. And effectively what you're trying to do is, despite the fact that they're having to take this treatment, you're trying to let them lead as good quality life with no impairments on what they're doing at all.
Okay. And so let's say they come back a few months later and parents say, well, all right, but could do better, still coughing a lot at night time, still struggling a bit with sport. Would you then up the steroid, or is it just let's reassess things first?
Well, you'd reassess things first, and the things you always need to reassess if there's not been a great response to treatment, or it's not as good as you would expect, is just to make sure that they're using their inhaler appropriately, to make sure that they're doing the treatment at the times that we're suggesting that they're doing it, that they've not made their own adaptions to doing it. And if those all seem okay, then the next step would be, according to where you are on the a dose of steroid that you've used, but the next step would normally be in a child that's over five to introduce a long-acting beta 2 agonist.
Okay, and as a on its own as a separate inhaler to the steroid, or do you, where are you with sort of combination inhalers?
Well, we would normally just go to a combination inhaler, and that may seem a little bit strange as a step, but actually there are good reasons for that, because you want to ensure that they don't find, oh, this new long-acting beta-2 agonist is really helping me, I'll try it without the steroid. Yeah. You don't want that. Secondly, having two inhalers can create a little bit of confusion and also may affect their adherence. So it's even better just to go switch over to a combined inhaler, even for that initial trial. The other thing is that it's much cheaper, actually, than providing the two inhalers separately. So that's been our local practice. That's what we've tended to do.
Okay. And which sort of combination inhaler do you tend to prescribe?
So the most common one that we would use when we're using a metered-dose inhaler is Seretide. So it's a combination of Flixetide in terms of an inhaled steroid and Salmeterol as a long-acting beta-2 agonist.
And what colour is it?
It's purple.
Right, and that's important.
It is.
Because parents tend not to say, oh, I'm on this. They go, no. I've got the purple inhaler. And you
exactly.
go, oh, bloody hell, which one is that? I can't remember. Because I know there's the blue one, there's the brown one, there's the purple one, and there's the green one.
Yeah.
What's the green one?
So the green one is the long-acting bronchodilator on its own.
Right.
So that's the Salmeterol.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So those are the colours we need to remember.
They are.
That's because, yeah, parents know colours, but not the names of them, generally speaking.
Yeah.
Okay. How about Montelukast?
Yeah.
Singulair, not singular, so not to, yes,
yeah
singular,
yeah,
sorry.
So this is a completely novel attempt when it was introduced, treatment of asthma, not steroid based. So it's a leukotriene receptor antagonist. And the initial trials were very encouraging. It was very clear that it wasn't as potent as introducing an inhaled steroid. It was probably, for those that you're old enough to remember, it's probably about the equivalence of sodium chromoglycate when we used to use that as a regular preventer for asthma. And the initial studies were really quite encouraging, particularly in the very younger children. And unfortunately, the evidence base for it has not been as strong as perhaps we would have hoped. So you will find if you look at the NICE and BTS guidelines, it's way down the list.
Right.
So it's there as an add-on treatment, particularly in the under fives, if they're on an inhaled steroid and they're still getting it. But it's not there as a standalone preventative treatment.
Because it was at one stage, wasn't it?
It was
an alternative to the steroid.
It was, and I always used it in the as much as saying that I know that this isn't as effective as an inhaled steroid, but also my experience was that it would pick up a lot of the younger children, the under fives, without them having to go on to a regular inhaled steroid. And I have to say, in my own practice, I would still tend to use it as first-line prophylaxis in very young children and have a low threshold to switch that over if it isn't good enough. But Montelukast isn't one of those treatments that you have to carry on for ages and ages. If it works, it works very quickly. And either the parents come back and say, wow, that's the best thing since sliced bread, or they say, well, it may be a little bit better, but I'm not sure. In that latter group, you would just go on to inhaled steroid. But there is still a group that seem to show a good response, even though perhaps that has not been, we've not been able to identify those in the big evidence-based trials.
Right, because that's kind of been my experience. They come back and go, you're brilliant.
Yeah.
Or you're an idiot.
Absolutely.
And, but it's not, I don't know if this is true or not at all, but it tended to be those maybe a bit more atopic. seemed to get on better with the Monte Luke cast.
Yeah, I think it is quite variable. And as I say, when you're thinking that there's only a small group that tends to respond to it, and then you try and subgroup that, it becomes quite difficult. But in my own practice, I would tend to still give it a try, because you're not wasting anything. You give them a 2-week trial. Within that period, they will either be better or not.
So as short as that?
As short as that. Okay. Yeah, as short as that. And very often, parents will notice a difference within 24, 48 hours.
Right. And this is, in the young ones, we're talking about the sprinkles, aren't we?
Yeah, we are. The granules, yeah. and for the older ones, there's a chewable fruit-flavoured trick. And it is once a day, and it's much easier to administer than regular inhale therapy.
Yeah. And can parents put it in anything, the sprinkles?
They're not meant to put it in anything, right. And there's quite strict guidance as to how they do it around meals. But I think that's more about the drug companies being a bit more careful about what they should be doing. Okay. I think practically it does seem to work in most situations.
In a bit of yoghurt for the toddlers.
In a bit of yoghurt for the toddlers.
Okay. Fine. So that's our Monte Luke casts, our purples, our blues, and all the other colours. Do you get much resistance from parents to inhale steroids? To sort of say, what about growth and what about thrush and what about those sorts of things?
Not nearly as much as we used to. And I don't know whether that's just because it's become much more common and much more acceptable for children to receive inhaled steroids. So I find that there's much less resistance, but even so, you still talk to them about the fact that, when we're starting off, it's small doses, that actually the evidence is that children with asthma that are undertreated are going to have more effect on their growth adversely than children that are appropriately treated. Good techniques in terms of, again, we've already emphasised the use of spacers to minimise thrush local side effects as well as systemic side effects, making sure they do it before they brush their teeth, or very good simple advice and techniques that will minimise it, let them understand it, tell them that this is something that they're going to be continued to monitor, that we keep an eye on their growth every time they come to clinic, and it's all part of that ongoing assessment.
So not much resistance to...
Not as it was in the past. Right. Okay. Yeah, it's interesting, but I don't find it nearly as much.
Okay. Okay, so we've then got the tricky ones, that you've tried all these things and we're happy that they're compliant and that technique's good, but they just still keep coming in to see us with exacerbations. Where next for these guys?
Well, so we've gone on to a combined inhaler with a higher dose of inhaled corticosteroid. We've probably given them Montelukast as well, although from my experience, it doesn't really help those very severe ones very much, but it's well tolerated. It doesn't have side effects, so we tend to use it as an add-on treatment. We'll even think about going back to the good old-fashioned theophylline.
Yep.
So we're seeing a bit of a resurgence of that. And interestingly, some patients still respond really well to it. So the main reason that theophylline fell out of favour was because it was poorly tolerated because of GI side effects. The worries about the narrow therapeutic index, so that relatively small changes in doses could make you make you toxic. Mm. So the worries again during an acute exacerbation. And again, it's a treatment, an oral treatment that needs to be taken regularly. You need good blood levels for it to have any effect. But we have been using it a bit more. And then for those groups, then you're starting to think about, if they're still troublesome, you're starting to think about possibly alternate day oral steroids at low dosage, which we want to avoid as much as possible. And these days now, they're the biogenic, so things like Xolair, actually targeting the high circulating IgE levels in these asthmatic patients. So this is a treatment that's it's injected, they have it either 2-weekly or 4-weekly, and it's targeted against their level of IgE. massive undertaking by patients, massive expense as well. So the patients have to be well chosen, and they have to be monitored to show that it's making a significant response to them.
And my understanding is that they've got to meet very strict criteria to qualify for this.
They have. And again, you know, we need to monitor how they do with it, because there are some patients that we have started with it who really don't seem to have shown a significant benefit. We've had some who have been frequent inpatients and with prolonged admissions, and they say that day to day they don't notice any difference. And then you look at actually what's happened to them in terms of inpatient things, and they've not been admitted for a couple of years.
Right.
And of course, the original funding for this treatment came from that fact that you had to demonstrate that it would reduce hospital admissions. Mm. So certainly, even if they don't notice a day to day difference, that may be a significant benefit to them, of course.
And is that something that's expected to be prescribed by a respiratory physician?
Yeah, absolutely.
You can't pop to your GP.
You have to tick all the other boxes, as you say. So you need to really have a good feel about adherence. So these days we may even issue them with a smart inhaler, which will measure the amount of inhaled treatment that they're actually taking, not only just what they're prescribed, but what they're actually taking.
Okay.
And that can be very revealing. even when they know it's being monitored, when they bring it back and it's only been had 20% usage, then, you know, it opens up a discussion as to where we should go. We look at other things, so we think about the environment that they're in, other trigger problems, so there may be other issues, psychosomatic type issues, or there may be upper airway type problems, so laryngeal dysfunction type problems that might need addressing, that might actually improve their overall control.
Yeah, fantastic. Last question, which is sort of slightly different, but as an acute question, is the discussion that's sort of ongoing about steroids for acute exacerbations.
Absolutely.
Now, not long ago, if you walked through the department and you vaguely wheezed, you got walloped with 3 days of oral prednisolone, thanks very much.
You did.
And then we sort of shifted almost completely the other way to nobody got it.
Yeah.
And now we seem to be just sort of shifting back to say, well, maybe you should get it. What are your...
So my views are very much that in the under fives, there's very little evidence that we should be giving prednisolone to any acute wheezer that comes in. However, if they have a diagnosis of asthma, or somebody has put them on a regular inhaled corticosteroid, then they would be things to suggest that they probably, when they have an exacerbation, should have oral steroids. In the over fives, I think the question is, you know, why not more than why? So in the older child, I'd be saying, well, why wouldn't I give this child steroids? And unless there was a reason, then you would get on and do it.
And the other sort of ongoing discussion is Pred versus Dex here, because we all know that Pred is disgusting.
Yeah.
And many times can you prescribe another dose because they've just vomited it back up, whereas dexamethasone seems to be much better.
It does.
Tolerated.
It does.
So would you have any particular...
I think, you know, whatever you can get in, probably. Yeah. So there may be some advantages with regards to dex. And certainly when we use it in croup and upper airways, it's very well tolerated and works really well. So, you know, in terms of the evidence base and the comparisons, I don't think there's a great deal that I've seen out of there, but there's no reason why one should work any different really to others. So it's about tolerability, really.
And that's a good point. I think what I've seen elsewhere, I know exactly who elsewhere, but to sort of say, why not, rather than, okay.
And that's a message we're trying to get out in primary care as well. So all these discussions about, you know, because one of the questions that I often ask is, well, don't we give them steroids? Mm. And so I think, again, that's we've developed the local wheezy child guidelines, and in that it sort of reiterates that in those younger ones, probably not, unless there are clear worries about asthma or they're on a regular inhaled steroid. In the older ones, then give it and think about it later.
And finally, is there any place for something like montelukast in a pulsatile manner in these acute ones. I've seen some of my colleagues used to do that. So, sort of more in hope, I think.
Yeah. Again, I think if you look at one-off cases and talk to parents, then some people believe that it did seem to have a benefit, but unfortunately, it's not been been backed up by the randomised controlled studies. So, you know, unfortunately, Monte Lucas has got quite a poor press at the moment. Mm. Yet, as I say, it came as a revolutionary new attempt at attacking a different pathway in asthma. And I think, like all these new treatments, there's an upsurge in uptake and interest, and then it will find its place. And I still think it has got a place, but I don't think there's any evidence really to suggest that pulsatile treatment, unfortunately, does anything in terms of reducing the duration of symptoms or the length of illness or their need to come into hospital.
Okay. So I think key take-homes from me are why not for steroids and go back and learn the colours of your inhalers. Lovely. Thank you very much for your time, Nigel.
No props.
Cheers.
Okay.